Humans are responsible for climate change, that we're already feeling the effects, that those most vulnerable are feeling the effects, but are least responsible. Key point. We already know what future climate change looks like. It looks like today's climate change on steroids. So that heat wave that we've just had, that was already made more likely, more severe due to humans. We will see more of those. Those extreme heavy precipitation events that we've seen repeatedly over recent years, more likely, more severe due to human climate change, will get more and more severe the longer we wait. It also showed that the contours of what we need to reach net zero and stop climate change getting worse, not return to normal, but stop it getting worse, are very, very clear. We need to reach net zero carbon dioxide emissions very rapidly by the middle of the century. We also need, sadly, to reduce methane emissions globally by about half on that same timescale. But we have the technologies, we have the approaches that work. And if you don't care about climate, you should care about climate action, because everything we do care about, education, health, all the things you care about, achieving the goals in those areas globally and nationally will be much, much harder if we don't get a grip on climate crisis. It matters more for our children, our grandchildren. The young people of today, the future they face is down to us and our choices.
You probably can hear the rain just starting, and you had mentioned about the heavy rainfall that we experience now. And what can people do in their everyday lives to make an impact?
So the beauty of these decarbonising zones is that it gets us to the local. There is no one solution that will resolve for everything for everyone. They are context specific, but it's about reducing our use of fossil fuels at the fundamental level. So it's thinking about how we get around, how we heat our homes, how we travel far afield, if we travel far afield. It's about also, sadly, things like what we eat. Eating things like beef is a lot worse than eating white meat, or even better, eating pulses, vegetables, etc. From a climate perspective, every choice we make matters, and we need to get informed, and then we need to start making those decisions count.
We've definitely seen a change in our climate. We're seeing heat waves across Europe. You mentioned that those temperatures are going to continue to rise.
Yes, so Europe is the fastest warming continent in the world. It's warmed three times as much since the middle of the 20th century as the global mean surface temperature has. We are seeing repeat heat waves across Europe. We're seeing increasing frequency of these very heavy precipitation events. This is our future. This is the only thing that really changes with increased temperature is the ferocity and the frequency of these events. So if you don't like what we saw this last week, if you don't want to hit 33, 34, 35 in Ireland within your lifetime, then we need globally to get a handle on emissions. And we can't outsource that to everyone else. Our actions matter every bit as much as anyone else's. If every person had the historical emissions of Ireland, we would be sitting today at 3.5 degrees centigrade of global warming. We have overachieved. We are not the worst overachievers, but we have overachieved, and we need to recognise our responsibility here.
Something that maybe the message doesn't get out right, that we can all play our part in doing something, whether it's recycling at home, it's looking how to reduce your own carbon emissions.
Absolutely. We say this is the government's problem, and government absolutely must lead. But government ultimately is not making the decision whether you buy an internal combustion engine car or an EV. It's not making the decision whether you install a heat pump or go for another oil or gas-fired central heating system. It's not making the choice as to what food you buy and what the impact of that food is. So each and every one of us has some responsibility. That does not, however, absolve the government. The government needs to step up and lead consistently on this issue. It is very rarely the headline story for the government of today. but it is the story of our lifetimes.
And do you think we need legislation or more legislation around the environment and climate change to put, I suppose, these actions for people to get used to them, or can human behaviour just...
Well, it's not either or, it's probably both, sadly. Look, if we'd started acting in 1990 when we knew we had a problem, if we'd not increased since 1990 globally emissions by 60% per year, if we'd actually started reducing them, we would have a whole range of options open to us to keep warming well below 2 degrees and strive for 1.5 degrees, the Paris Agreement long-term temperature goal. The fact is we have dithered, delayed, both as governments and as individuals, and we are now in a mess where we need everything everywhere all at once. So we need action, at speed. It is, governments need to get more real, use more of the policy taxation levers that they have. But equally, we as individuals, as communities, need to step up and take our part in making climate action happen.
Because if people want to retrofit their homes, it's quite costly. Are there enough different grants available? Are there enough incentives there to get people or give them that little bit of push?
So grants are great if you have capital to start with. I've long pushed for the fact that we should actually be thinking about long-term green finance that opens it up to a far broader range of individuals. But also there are individuals who are in fuel poverty who cannot afford any which way to take action. And there you have to think about the elements of a just transition. Leave nobody behind. Government needs to step up and pay wholesale for that action for those individuals. So it's the right activity in the right way. We are too obsessed with grants, which, if you want, are a sock to the well-off. People like myself, as a professor, I can access those. But that is from a position of enormous personal privilege, which many of your listeners do not have, and it frustrates me that we have not cracked how do we make these solutions accessible to those who need them most. Because people who are driving an internal combustion engine car are crying at the fuel pumps. I'm driving an electric car, charging it overnight to go 500 kilometers in my car. From the electricity cost alone is about €5. Okay. For most people, going from Tullamore to Edenderry and back in an ICE car would cost that much. And yet we do not make the solutions available to the people who need them most.
You mentioned just transition there, and the Midlands region is, I suppose, at the very, very heart of it, because many people here have relied on bogs for years to heat their homes. Many are very slow to switch over from their open fire, especially given what we've seen when we had Storm Eowyn, and we lost energy supply. Lots of people were left who had gone for the environmentally friendly solutions of heat their home, but they were left without heat and power, where many people who had still had their range was able to cook or heat their homes. What kind of message do you have for people in those situations?
So it points to the fact that we've not completely cracked the energy transition for those folks who were in that position. I personally am looking, and again, enormous self-privilege, I'm looking at installing a home battery inside a kill switch, for want of a better word. That means when the grid goes down, I could still have electricity to run a heat pump, to run an electric induction cooker, to heat water, etc., possibly for 2 or 3 days if you get a large second-hand electric vehicle battery. So when we think about solutions, if we're asking people to come along on an electrification journey, and most of effective mitigation is electrification, then we need to make the electricity system far more robust. That doesn't mean driving every electricity pylon underground. It's economically infeasible. It's not without its own problems, because if a fault happens, you need to dig up the cable and fix it. But there are ways that we can think about, both at individual household levels, but also at community levels. If you're going to put battery storage Do you put it all next to the wind farm in a huge conglomeration, or do you put it in your communities of 20, 30, 50 households? A big battery that can store and isolate that part of the grid, and those 30, 50 households can still have an electricity supply for a finite period of time, but probably long enough for 99% of storm events. Mm. So we've got to get real about how we build resilience in our electricity supply, and the solutions are out there.
As part of the plans to turn Tullamore into a decarbonisation zone, the charity, Cloud Energy, is working with the local authority to eliminate energy poverty in Ireland. A pilot scheme is running in the town to provide free renewable energy to homes in need while supporting the national climate agenda. CEO Alan Wiley says they use renewable energy that otherwise would be wasted to help people in poverty.
We started with the pilot across the country, but also here in Tullamore and with Offaly County Council, whereby we install a smart immersion controller, which we can access remotely. And when there's curtailment, which is when there's surplus renewable energy, we then turn on those devices remotely. The resident wakes up to a free tank of hot water, and at the end of the month, we send a report to their retailer, and the electricity retailer gives them a credit on their bill, or a voucher if they're a prepay customer.
Okay. And how many people are in fuel poverty?
Well, unfortunately, the number's enormous. There's 550,000 homes in Ireland that are in energy poverty. So you're probably talking about 1.2 million people. It's an absolutely huge social problem.
And you spoke there about the pilot scheme in Tullamore. How many homes in Tullamore have you been assisting?
Yeah, well, we've started with the pilot of 50 homes. So we've about 46 of them done. And we're ready to go to phase two and to scale it up. So I'm delighted, actually, that Offaly County Council, who have been an incredible partner of Energy Cloud, and I'd really like to applaud their team from the CEO down to the Climate Action Team, John McNally and Aisling Lam and so on. They've been just phenomenal. And so we're going to do an additional 100 homes, which we started in the DZ in Tullamore, and we're going to then expand it out across the county.
How many tanks of hot water have you delivered since the project began?
Well, obviously we started at zero homes and now we're scaling up. So we've delivered about 700 tanks of water so far, but now they're up to 45 homes. Obviously every night there's curtailment, we can deliver another 45, 50 tanks of hot water, scaling up to 150 over the coming months.
The energy that's available, so where does it come from and how come we have a surplus of it?
The reality right now is that when the wind energy is at its strongest is during the night time, so between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. okay, and the demand is at its lowest, so that's where the surplus renewable energy is coming from. And what we're trying to do is ensure that that's not wasted, but that's actually put to a good use.
And how much energy has been wasted so far?
Oh gosh, well, since we started tracking it over the last 7 years, there's been 2.1 billion euros of wasted energy. In a single night there last week, there was over 3 million euros of wasted energy. That could have heated about 3.1 million hot water tanks. So the numbers are enormous. And our estimate is, as we go forward into the lifetime of this government, because obviously you can't do anything about the past, but in the next 5 years, we could see 3 billion euros of wasted energy if we don't act now. And that's the challenge for us. We're delighted that the government has made a commitment in the programme for government to use surplus renewable energy that would otherwise be wasted to help people who are in energy poverty. So that's going to be enormously useful. Now we just need to put targets against that and act against it. But we think the government are committed to do this, and we're really positive and hopeful, actually, as we go forward, that we can really address this issue.
And could this be expanded out further? Like, you're delivering tanks of hot water, which is incredible for people who don't have hot water. But could it be used to actually give them more credits or energy for their home?
Yeah, we think so. I mean, the numbers are huge, you know, when you're talking about billions over a short number of years. So yes, you could. So when we look, we've used a smart immersion controller, as I mentioned, but if you expand this out to heat pumps, for example, you could heat their entire homes. You could actually get people out of energy poverty. And while we have been focused in the pilots on actual devices, putting devices into people's home, you could do this by policy as well, government policy. So you could, for example, have a social tariff. So if there's surplus renewable energy, why don't people get their electricity for free during that period if they're in energy poverty? That's something that we think would be a really good idea to do. And there's other ways you could do that as well. Offaly has got a huge number of wind farms. So if there's surplus renewable energy in those wind farms, why aren't the people in that community getting free electricity during that time, which again would lift people out of energy poverty, but it also helped the affordability crisis in energy as well.
Where did the idea for Energy Cloud come from?
Well, I didn't find it, but I think, as the name suggests, there was some inspiration from Food Cloud, which was, you've got food waste over here and hungry people over there. Why don't you join it up? So we knew, and the founders knew, that there was wasted energy, which I've discussed, and there was people in energy poverty. So with a tiny bit of technology, we wanted to join it up. And we don't believe that we can solve this on our own, but I think what we've done a good job of doing is highlighting that this can be solved. And that's what we'd like to help local authorities, approved housing bodies, the government, help work over the coming years to actually make a real difference to this.
Ours to Protect, brought to you by Midlands 103, the IBI, and funded by Commission Na Mban with the television licence fee.